All right, so.
Okay, everyone, tonight we are dealing with it's Parshas Re'eh, and obviously the title is Simon Biles, Quitter or Winner. Get into it. So let us go to the videotape for those people maybe has been under a rock. Let me bring you up to date with the Simon Biles drama, which has been, fantastic. Here we go. So let's go to the videotape, get everybody up to date here.
Team USA. Sudie Lee cemented her place in American gymnastics royalty, winning gold in the women's all-around competition. Teammate Simone Biles was there to cheer her on, and now Biles is sharing some new insight on what caused her to withdraw from the competition. ABC's Kenneth Moten joins us live in Tokyo with more on that and some other big highlights from the games. Kenneth, Simone is blaming what she calls the twisties. Can you explain what that means?
Well, Diane, Simone Biles said her mind and body simply are not in sync. And she said that to her fans, to her followers on her Instagram account, literally overnight, soliciting and answering their questions. She also showed them her training, saying she just can't get rid of what she called the twisties. That's when gymnasts are midair and lose awareness of where they are, making it very difficult to land safely. We've talked right here about her gift of air awareness. So this is something that's very unusual for her. The fact that she doesn't know where she is in the air when she does some of her, what she does, what she's known for. And she said that she was not experiencing the twisties before she left for Tokyo, Diane, and that when it's happened in the past, it's taken about 2 weeks to go away. But Biles added she does not have to explain why she puts her health first, saying physical health is mental health. Right now, USA Gymnastics says she's still being evaluated daily, and no decision has been made on whether she will compete next week.
Yeah, she posted some videos to go along with that, showing her unable to land, her bars dismount. Yeah. Scary, scary stuff, Kenneth, for sure. And there was also a scary moment on the BMX track when American Connor Fields had to be carried off on a stretcher after a crash. What's the latest on his condition?
Well, Connor Fields.
There we go. Okay, for now, of course, the plot thickens because today, earlier in Tokyo time at the Olympics, she, even though that she had bowed out of, I think, four competitions that she was slated to do, she did do a balance beam presentation, which does not require a lot of, in the air issues about dismounting, et cetera. And then she was able to get the bronze medal. Okay, so let's get into this more in depth. All right. All right. Let's do a share screen. Let's go to the sheet. And here we go. Okay, so here we go. So why did Simone Biles drop out of these Olympic competitions? Who can give me the succinct, basic answer?
She wasn't there mentally. She didn't want to risk her physical health,
Correct. She did not want to get herself hurt. And also, even if she would, quote unquote, manage to do it, what is y'all, if she takes the slot, what is she also doing?
Bringing down the team with a low score.
Bringing down the team with a low score. And also, in other words, because if she steps out, another person can take their place. Someone who's also been practicing.
Qualified for the events.
For the whole time. You know what I'm saying? So it's she might be subject to her injury, A. B, lower the score of the team. Three, also preclude another person who is not suffering these illnesses, get a shot at the goal. Now, this gets to the old question. In your opinion, should Simone have soldiered through the experience and competed like most gymnasts would, or she has the right to withdraw, or she was right to withdraw? What do you guys say?
I mean, I say no.
Raise your hand if she, raise your hand if you think that she should have just pushed it, because a lot of, just to clarify, if you don't have pressure, you don't have Olympic level competition. If there's no stress in competition and challenge, that's what being an Olympic level competitor is. Invariably, you have gymnasts who had performed when they were injured with their legs. You know what I'm saying? And they quote unquote soldiered through and also got a gold medal. I mean, in other words, it's not simply like you're not feeling up to it. You have trained your whole life for this, and professional athletes routinely, what they call push through the pain. You know what I'm saying? Routinely push through the pain and the challenge, and that would of course makes the experience great. So, who thinks she was right to withdraw? Raise your hand. We got Shayna. All right, so Shayna, since you are claiming that you're not sure, or you consider that she may have should have soldiered through, give us your feelings on the matter.
When it originally came out that she was withdrawing, she was talking about, or everything was all about mental health and mental stress, strength and mindset, and it came after a poor performance, which could make it sound like she's a sore loser, but also it was during the time of the team competition where, yeah, you need to be at your best because the team's depending on you, but at the same time, the team is depending on you. And for you to withdraw at that time hurts the team. And also, as it was at the very beginning of the competition, it could, if she had, I guess, any idea that this could happen, she could have withdrawn earlier to leave the open, like let somebody else fill in the opening, because there are, as you have said, plenty of people who were, or not plenty, but other people that could have made Team USA and been there at the Olympics.
Right, right.
But the other point of it then is, when you're listening to the video clip you showed where they're talking about the twisties, where you don't have your, I guess, spatial awareness or air awareness when you're in the air, if that is the case, then that is going to subject her to potential injury if she doesn't know where she is in the air doing the flips and the difficult routines that she does. But then I guess it just opens up the question of, well, how is she able to compete today? Because I would think even on the balance beam, you're not in the air the way you're on the air in the rings or on the bars. You're still very much in the air and you're not on the floor. You're on a beam.
Right. Well, so she did not know.
She also got bronze, which is like rare for her. Like, so you could tell she wasn't 100%.
Well, also last week, she wasn't even confident she was going to be able to even do the beam.
Mm-hmm.
So look, but she basically as Shayna just pointed out, being that she claimed that basically in a certain sense, there's some mental issue. We have to, psychological issue? I don't know. We can speculate from here till tomorrow, but for whatever reason, her spatial reasoning or awareness is what allows her to do the amazing things that she does. Now, if she's going to land on her head and do profound damage, obviously she should not do it. So that would be right. But as you can imagine, she was under profound pressure, huge pressure. She's not just in her gym with her friends. She's not even in just with a local, let's say a college level performance with, let's say, 10, 20,000 people watching on TV. Literally, tens of millions of people are watching the Olympics, on TV or online, etc. So this gets into what we want to get into because, Suzanne, you have a comment.
No, I was just going to say, obviously being in the mental health field, if she had broken her leg and had withdrawn, it wouldn't be a question. But because mental health was brought up, it's like, maybe she could have, it's like split. It's like we wouldn't have expected her because if she had a broken leg. And I think it contributes to right, like you were saying, that tremendous pressure, but it continues to contribute to, while it's gotten better, the stigma of mental health. And it's kind of sad that we're still there, that, well, I'm not saying you're saying this, but she needed to do this because it's the team, it's the, and, you know, I've seen, like, we've seen, like, really a lot of suicides this year in my regular day job, more than we've seen since I've been there. And so it's a little bit sad that we're still in this place, that she had a commitment to the team. It's very important, mental health. And I think had she, like I said, broken her leg, people wouldn't have said she needs to push through with that broken leg.
Correct. So first of all, Judaism believes and agrees with mental health is physical health. And just if you want a quick awareness of that, you could just have open up your siddur to the Amidah. When we talk about Rafa'inu Hashem v'nerafe, Hoshinu v'nakisit avalef, Hoshulachu makoseinu, and then we'll put in the insert for daving for a specific person who's ill. We say, Yir Son from Nacha, Hashem Elokeinu Kevosai, may be your will, God, our God, God of our forefathers. Hashtishlach refuat ha-nefesh, refuat ha-guf. What's refuat ha-nefesh? Refuat ha-nefesh means psychological, literally the health of the soul, but here means the personality, means that dimension of what we call soul. Souls used in a number of ways. And in contrast to refuat ha-guf. So Simone Biles, if she broke her leg, you would talk about refuat ha-guf, healing her body. Refuat ha-nefesh is talking about dealing with her psychological well-being. So we don't have this differentiation. We take mental health is even more important than physical health, because a broken leg can heal. A broken psyche, much harder, and sometimes never. Person who has been gone through trauma, etc., it's far worse. So, on the other hand, you know, but there is idea of, you know, but what makes it a little bit challenging is that there is stress of performance, pressure both internal and external, which is very intense, and then when it crosses the line to a psychological, we call it disorder or challenge, or in this case, that she's not, that it's in a certain sense, her, whatever her emotional block is, it actually affects her physical ability, which is spatial awareness, is your sense, you know, her highly tuned Olympic grade level of balance, which none of us have.
Okay. Can we go back a second? Because so since I didn't get the preview and I didn't know anything about this story until I just saw the video now, right? Yeah. So I was thinking of it compared to, like, you know, the selfish ego athlete, right, who's going beyond himself when really he should just give it up and let somebody who got a break to get on, because the guy wants to be the star. Team USA for USA, for her, I think it's a selfless act. You know, obviously her parents, you know, they're the ones that I can see being more disappointed, just because in the nature of certain types of parents, it could be they'd support her 100%. But as far as from a team point, I would think, you know, if USA had a better chance because she took a step down, I think that's a very mature, healthy thing that she did. Unless it is an excuse, because
No. I'm agreeing that she did, and I think most people support her decision. But of course, there are people saying, you know, you should tough it out and soldier on, because there have been phenomenal Olympic cases where people have soldiered through difficulties and have been successful. Okay, but leaving that aside, but just to know, so Chaim, just, you know, Simone Biles is not just a gymnast. She is sort of like the world-class leading gymnast for the last 5 years, whose routines are so challenging, only she can do them. So that's why everybody was, in fact, one could even argue that she was probably going to be the star of the entire Olympics, because the gymnastics is always a centerpiece of the Summer Olympics in general, A. And B, she's the best of the best. So that's why it's a very big deal. It puts the issue of mental health and physical health in clear relief, which is unusual. And just to echo what Suzanne's saying is that people, you know, I mean, look at the issue. How many people do we know that if they even have issues will not go to a therapist? Many people still, because there's a stigma, like, you know, it's something wrong, versus nobody has a stigma about going to the doctor. Well, some people do, but you know, if a person has a broken leg, they're not gonna say, well, I'm not gonna go to the orthopedist, generally I'm just gonna walk it off. No, nobody's gonna do that. You know, there'll be a few people, but generally not. Okay, now I want to, the reason I'm bringing Simone Biles, because actually the first two psukim of our Parsha get into a major concept in Judaism, which is, could be articulated in question number three. In what sense was the decision whether to compete or withdraw a classic example of Bechira, or we call it in full words, Bechira Chafshit, free will? How was her decision a classic example of Bechira Chafshit, free will? Who can explain that? How is this a classic example of a free will decision?
Because nobody told her to stay down, step aside. She decided that.
She did, right? So she's deciding. That's one feature. But what is one of the inner elements of that makes something truly a Bechira question? In contrast to, you go into a restaurant, let's say you're going to in honor of Suzanne, you're going to go to a vegan restaurant and you're going to say, I'm going to take the Taipei or whatever, this very soy dish versus the other soy dish. That's not really a Bechira decision, because question is really, that's an issue of a collision of moods. Am I more in the mood for this dish, or I'm more in the mood for that dish? That's not really classically a Bechira decision. What is the classic features of a Bechira decision? I'm going to give you some, if you guys know. Anybody know? If not, I'll go to the text, which will give you the answer. Anybody know? All right. Let's learn the Rambam, where he actually shares his out, and he quotes the Psukim, which is from our Parsha. All right. Shana, read it out.
Rambam, Laws of Repentance, Chapter 5, Halacha 3. This principle, free will, is a fundamental concept and a pillar on which rests the totality of the Torah and mitzvot. As Devarim states, behold, I have set before you today life and good, death and evil. Similarly, Devarim states, behold, I have set before you today the blessing and the curse, implying that the choice is in your hands. Any one of the deeds of men which a person desires to do, he may, whether good or evil. Therefore, Devarim states, if only their hearts would always remain this way. From this, we can infer that the Creator does not compel or decree that people should do either good or bad. Rather, everything is left to their own choice.
Okay, so I want to give you guys a little... Notice how the Psukim, when they talk about free will, they say, I set before you life and good, death and evil. Or, I've said before you today, blessings and the curse. What does that tell you about the nature of a free will decision, Bechira?
There's an evil or a good. There's a conscious. The consequence or reward.
And what are the consequences of the two sides?
Blessing or curse, but it would be.
Also, so the, here I have a simple question. Oh, so why doesn't everybody take the blessing? Why does everybody choose life?
But wouldn't the blessing and the curse be bestowed by Hashem? We wouldn't necessarily see it.
We're going to get to that. That's a good question. We're going to get to that too. But let's, before we get to that part, but if you have a choice of blessing versus curse, life versus death, why wouldn't everybody take blessing in life? Why would anybody select cursing and death? Why is there even a conflict? You should always pick life.
Because what we're saying is death is something that is going to have to go onto a belief or a trust. It doesn't seem like death from the human eye.
Why does it seem like death? Why does it not seem like death? And why does it not feel like evil?
Because in this case, in these situations, for example, the whole world is doing it and having pleasure out of it. We're having a different type of life.
Exactly, because
and not dying.
Because on one hand, either your own body or the society saying, no, this is not death, this is not evil, this is life and this is blessing. But your own mind tells you, no, this actually is death and evil. Or conversely, when people say, no, don't do that, that's death, that's evil. And you say, no, that in fact is blessing, that is life. And you're figuring it out as an act of careful mindedness, careful calculation, careful thought. So let's bring it into Simone Biles for a moment. What's the Bechira decision? On one hand, what is the world telling her to do? Either overtly or by implication. What should she do?
To compete.
She should compete. Because they don't really care about her. They want to have...
they want to see the U.S. win gold medals and her to do...
They want to see the awesome competition. They right. want to say, suck it up. We don't care about... They don't really care about her. She's a tool of entertainment. But what does she know? And she and only knows, because in a certain sense, only we... Nobody knows what's in her mind. Nobody knows in reality, is she having the twisties or not the twisties, right? Okay. But in her own mind knows that if she does the rings, she does the all these different performances in her current state, what's going to happen? Well, it's going to be death and evil. And she's going to suffer, and maybe insignificantly. But so there's a tremendous Bechira requires, there is a conflict. Your mind says this, what to do this decision, i.e. to withdraw from the competition. Well, that's life. But people are telling her, no, that's death. And you have to sort that out. That has to be a thoughtful consideration. That's Bechira. When you have a conflict of two conflicting things, the question is, what is life? What is blessing? What is death? What is evil? And it's not, and you're hearing either internally or externally different voices. And you have to sort of step out and think it over carefully and have the energy to act on your convictions. That is Bechira. So we could all surmise that Simone Biles was under amazing pressure to just perform. But out of her strength, that she recognizes that I'm not going to do a self-sabotaging or a destructive act to myself. I'm not going to do it. I don't care if a billion people want me not to do this. Fortunately, people were sympathetic to her. But as Suzanne pointed out, people are still not so sympathetic to mental illness. They look at it as your fault. You're really a loser. You got problems. Pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. Suck it up. Don't be a baby. Okay, have we all heard these kind of things? Yes, we have. And the bottom line is, I want to share with you, that calculation that she made is a quintessential example of Bacharta Bechayim, choose life and not choosing death, choosing the bracha and not choosing the Klola. Because the challenge is what's confusing in life. But what really is bracha? Or what really is chaim? It's not always so clear. And we get confused. And we make mistakes. And then we can get klola. Okay. All right. Let's keep on going. This is a very good question. Let me ask you this. What pressures will make this decision so difficult? When do you think Simone made this decision? In the immediate moment of the Olympics or in the pre-planning in the month before the competition?
I mean, it was immediate. When she came off the floor, I think it was a floor routine or maybe the balance beam. And she immediately just went to her coach and her teammates and just said, you know, I couldn't hear like the audio, but she kind of like just made that decision to like bow out and have the alternate take over.
That's when she told them. But what did she ever have a, do you think somebody who's working on that level would have thought about
like,
possible, as you know, if you're working day and night for the Olympics and you're visualizing every one of your routines, are you also not visualizing if things go wrong?
Depends on what type of wrong, but you usually when you visualize, you try to visualize the success.
Like,
But I do think that this, the way you phrase this question, I think that it probably was in the back of her mind. And like, there's something I'm going to make up. Something happened in the last few months or year where there was, or, you know, more recent where this was something that came up and she realized she has to watch out for this.
I mean, she looked amazing during the Olympic trials. So this was like,
right. Well, she said that she did not have this problem before and she was in peak condition. But she did say, as you guys heard from the video, what hint in the video gives you a hint to the right answer? There's a hint. She showed her hand. She referenced the fact that she knows how long, if I get the quote-unquote twisties, how long it takes to get back into shape. It could take as much as 2 weeks. So she's very familiar with the situation. And she knows, like, if I have this problem, I can't power my way out of this because it's my mind.
Right, you can't go into the ice bath for it.
Right, exactly. Right. In other words, you know, now again, of course, all people have watched, you know, certainly professional football, professional things, or certainly movies about professional football and baseball. The classic situation where the coach trainer basically, you know, there's a big game and there's a pitcher and, you know, they got him iced up, but it's still a problem. And they'll just like, you know, shoot him up with cortisone and all kinds of stuff to basically mask the pain for the short amount of time. And then he might be doing some substantial damage to his arm because, you know, you're going to get the short time benefit, but the long time damage. So in order to make, when you get confronted with a lot of pressure, in order to make the right decision, it's very hard to do that on the fly. But if you thought through the problem in advance and you'll know what to do, then you got a shot. Otherwise, you might just get crushed. Here's the key thing. What are the three elements does Simone's choice about withdrawing from the Olympic competition have in common with every Bechira decision? What are three elements? There are three elements that were part of Simone's choice. What are parts of a Bechira decision? What are component parts? This is critical.
What's the right thing to do?
Well, that's part of it, but let's go a step before that.
If I push myself to compete, what'll happen to me or what'll happen to the team?
Even before, but that's already getting ahead of it. What is step one? What's step one of a Bechira experience? You first have to have the conflict. Step one, identifying the conflict and able to articulate what are the two sides. So in her case, I want to compete. I want to be successful. I want to bring home the gold. And I feel a lot of pressure. I have fans on my Instagram and world renowned that are looking forward to my performance. And I don't want to leave them. And I don't want to let them down. On the other hand, I recognize that in my current condition, I am going to harm myself. So it's awareness of both pressures, awarenesses, and then figuring out, as you said, Scott, what is the right thing to do? Do I cave to the pressure and try to make people happy? Or do I prioritize my health and well-being, my mental health first? Then once you've made that assessment, step three is what? Is having the energy to act on your convictions. You might be aware of the right choice, but you still might get what? Overwhelmed and ignore it. We've all had that. We've all been at the Baskins and Robbins ordering some ice cream. And you are feeling that, yeah, I want the ice cream. I've had a rough day. I deserve the ice cream. But you recognize that is not helping my health and wellness program, consuming 400 calories with all the toppings in 6 minutes. That might not be moving me in the right direction. Especially calculating how much exercise you have to do to work out, you know, like 300-400 calories. That's over an hour of very vigorous exercise. Anyways, but that's just, I would never think of this question, but, you know, just somebody might consider that. Anywho, now let's keep on going. So I just want to say very clearly, identifying the conflict, articulating both sides of the thought, both sides, acting upon what you perceive as the right choice based upon your strength of mind and conviction. Okay, those are your three choices. Now, this is key. Now let's take this up to a bigger point. Why is Bechira the pillar on which rests the totality of the Torah and the life of mitzvos? Everything is dependent upon this. Why? Who could explain that?
Is it because it's talking about right and wrong, good and evil?
Okay, so why is the whole Torah... Let's say man could not choose. You're just going to be a function of your emotions.
Or your pre-programmed,
you're determined. What would happen to the Torah if that was the case?
If people were just acting on their emotion, it would be pretty...
No, you didn't have free will. That free will, many people maintain that free will.
You wouldn't be... You wouldn't be what makes like humans human, like unique.
That's
choice.
Like the angels don't have free will, right?
They don't have free
right.
will. But let's get a little more clear. You're in the right zip code.
There'd be no purpose to it because it's a guy that
God's choosing what, telling us what to do and choosing our path, and there's no
right, there's
humanity
no idea
to it.
Right. In other words, because if you do the mitzvah, well, that doesn't show anything because you're always determined to do that mitzvah. Or conversely, you're not doing that mitzvah, you're always destined not to do the mitzvah. So there's no point to having a Torah if you can't really respond to a command and make a judgment whether you're going to do it or not. Obviously, the idea of reward and punishment. Why reward a person for a mitzvah that they're either going to do or punish somebody for a sin that they had to do anyways? The entire Torah would have no purpose because you're basically from cradle to grave, your story has been written already. You have no free will. You're basically a robot. You've been already programmed. And you're going to go through life, you know, whatever the situation is, you're going to respond in the opposite way. That's called, in fancy language, that means you are a determined being. Judaism, as we from our pasuk in this parsha, of maintains vigorously. Ibn Ezra vigorously maintains that one of the foundational principles is that a person has the capacity to make a free will decision. Now, that's not saying, by the way, very important caveat, that not saying that every one of our decisions are free will. Oftentimes, we get overwhelmed by our feelings, by our emotions, by the peer pressures, and we make bad decisions. But we've also experienced the opposite, where we feel pressure one way, we feel pressure the other way, and we make a calculation what makes the most sense, and we do that. We are able to make a decision, not a function of our circumstance, or how we've been brought up, or what our friends are doing, or what society is doing. We're not bound by that. That might affect us a lot of the time, but we're not enslaved by what they call nature and nurture. Nature being the environment around us. I'm sorry, our genetics, and nurture being the environment around us. We're not only that. We are that, and we have a soul that allows us the freedom of freedom. The soul gives us the freedom of freedom. So that's it. Without that, there's no Torah. There's no mitzvah, because there's no point. Because if you're already going to do the mitzvah, or already not going to do the mitzvah, and that was not a function of free will, what kind of perfection, what point is that to give God to give Torah to people who can't really choose to keep the command? You're not really doing a command. You're just following your computer algorithm. That's not really a free will. That's not really, that makes the entire Torah pointless. Reward and punishment, pointless. Command, pointless. Okay, so that's why the pasuk, the opening pasuk of our parsha, of which we're going to read right now, which Suzanne's going to read to us right now, is a critical part of our faith, of our Judaism. Okay, Suzanne, read us the first pasukim of the parsha.
Okay, you can therefore see that I am placing before you both a blessing and a curse. The blessing will come if you obey the commandments of God, your Lord, which I am prescribing to you today. The curse will come if you do not obey the commandments of God, your Lord, and you go astray from the path that I am prescribing for you today, following other gods which you have not known.
Okay, so as the Rambam said before, by putting before the people, the blessing and the curse, which means that it's up to us. God does not force us to do mitzvahs or not do mitzvahs. That is entirely up to us, okay? So it's a free will decision. Now, this gets into a whole host of topics. Question number 8, why does Hashem increase pressure on us by threatening punishment if we choose wrongly? Isn't the decision-making process of Bechira pressure enough? Conversely, why is he so generous in giving us a blessing for exercising our Bechira properly? Good, Shana.
I think one could argue that it's not necessarily your bechira that you're being rewarded or punished for. It's more following the mitzvot, that when you follow the mitzvot, you're rewarded, and when you don't follow them, that's when you get punished.
That's certainly true. But why have a punishment if we don't follow the mitzvah? In other words, you could just say, if the reward of the mitzvah is a mitzvah, and the punishment of not doing a mitzvah is you lost an opportunity. So why should there be a quote unquote a threat of punishment? Which we read every day in Shema. If the Jewish people follow the mitzvahs, they are rewarded. If they do not, there is national punishment. So why do we have to have that? If the Torah is so awesome and so good and so fantastic, what's up with the punishments?
You see it throughout the journey through the Torah, the way they assimilate into Egyptian society. And then again, with the lore of, I forget which women, with Baal Peor, I think.
The Moabite, Midianite women, the Moabite and the Midianite women.
And then Hashem knows that at some point, while yes, we'll be living in the land, there's still room for temptation in Israel. There's still plenty of bad role models, plenty of corruption, even from with own and not influenced by outside society. But then even when we're in Galut and we're kicked out of Israel, we need some sort of motivation to continue to choose to stay Jewish. Like even living in New York, there's so many temptations, and it would so be so easy to go off the derech that we need something to, I guess, external to motivate us when we have trouble finding that internal motivation.
Excellent. Correct. Because to have a fully thought out judgment of what the right thing to do is very hard. Having the knowledge that there could be both a reward and a punishment is helpful to do that which is correct. I mean, we all know the challenge of exercise. We know we have to exercise. But that's why people who suggest, ways to motivate, you get a partner, or, you have all kinds of, you create a whole system of rewards and punishment for yourself to be successful, to complete the, to keep on track. Or conversely, if you're on a thoughtful eating program. This is a well-known problem. The problem is that we, all people, even if we know what's good for us, we have a hard time doing that which is good for us, because the immediate satisfaction of what we think is good, what Shana writes as the temptation, is not so simple to avoid. And therefore, having an external motivation is helpful. Now, let's get down to, but there's also another component. Let's take a look at, bring it back to Simone Biles. What would punishment have looked like in the case of Simone Biles? And what would be blessing look like in the case of Simone Biles? We're applying blessing, bracha, curse, klala, to the case of Simone Biles, by her making the wrong bechira decision, what would klala, curse, look like in her situation, or punishment look in her situation?
Rabbi, just to clarify, we're saying her bechira, that the punishment would be if she didn't withdraw?
Yeah, if she continued with it, or let's say we're going from the saying that we are all of us are in agreement that she made the right decision, and it was a thoughtful decision, and it was a courageous decision. And therefore, we're calling it a bechira decision. Step one. Step two, let's say she didn't. What would have been the klala, or the onesh, the punishment that would have resulted from that?
The punishment could be in the world of gymnastics, you could say a life-threatening injury.
Life-threatening injury on top of world humiliation.
Lost to the team. Yeah.
Okay. She would have gone and done something, and she could have hurt herself, and it would have been, physically. So the klala, by making the RAND decision, that not that the punishment was, it would be external, but intrinsically to the activity itself, would give birth to klala, punishment, cursedness, because she would have basically suffered for that bad decision. Conversely, what will be the blessing that she is now currently reaping by making the courageous decision? What are the brachot that she is gathering for her right bechira, for her correct bechira? Let's list the brachot that she's getting.
People are talking about mental health.
So let's start from her and work on our way out. Number one, what's bracha number one? Start from her and go outward.
She's helping other people.
That's still external to her. With her, herself. What's the bracha that she is, that she, from her bechira, what bracha did she automatically receive? Immediately.
She was not physically injured.
Yeah, she is. She did not suffer any injury. So she is safe, sound, healthy, and fit. That's bracha number one. What other brachas is she getting? She's being celebrated by the world by being a courageous woman who, despite lots of pressure, did not give in to make other people happy and prioritize her mental health. Third bracha she gives to everybody else. She's reinforcing the idea, the sophisticated, mature idea, that mental health is physical health. She's giving that bracha to all of us. Because she went through that little bit of emotional pain, not little, big, of basically disappointing. We all do things to not disappoint other people. She's disappointing millions of people, okay? Maybe her parents, her coach, her teammates. She's letting them all down. But to the power of her Bechira, she didn't give in. Tough lady. Gotta like her. In fact, I had a friend that said that she exemplifies the Pirkei Avot point of Ezeh HaGibor, who is the powerful one? Hakovish is Yisrael, one who subdues their desires. So your desire to be loved, which is a very big desire, she subdued that for her health and well-being. So that was a big, she's a gibor. She's really mighty. She first of all, she's physically mighty. You want to, she's basically a muscle. Okay. A. B, she is, but more importantly, she's emotionally strong and self-aware. So she gets a lot of credit for that. Now, what I like to do, and I give credit to Scott Shapiro for giving me a lot of chizuk and telling me, Rabbi, I like the scenario. So now every time I'm bringing it down to the scenario.
They were great.
Okay, well, which is a good way to bring the idea we're talking about, free will, bechira, challenges, into the regular life. See, here's scenario number one. Steve M. Jair attends his friend's wedding. The smorgasbord is amazing. He has recently committed to a thoughtful eating program. He sees the meat carving station and has a strong desire to eat everything with no limits. What they call in Yiddish, to fresh out. How is this a Bechira moment? What will be the bracha and klala, the blessing and curses that will emerge from his decision? How would pre-planning his eating at the wedding figure into his success or failure? What do you guys say? What's the Bechira decision here?
To just, go to the meat station, but, give me like a little slice.
Okay, right? So you're already going right to solution. But I'm saying let's talk about how it's a Bechira. Let's put it through our three-step program. What's the conflict?
He could ruin all his gains from eating healthy the past week or month or whatever.
But what's the desire? Let's start off. What's desire number one?
Stay healthy.
That's not his desire. That is not the desire number one. That's not what he wants.
To eat the meat.
His desire is to emerge himself in absolute meat pleasure. I know I'm making Suzanne upset about
it. See
the
difference between me, Shane, and Scott. We see that on tape.
Right. He wants to, in other words, goal one is pleasure number one. The drive number one is basically eat whatever you want. So if it was a vegan wedding, it would be whatever the most delicious vegan choices, for my vegan friends.
All the seitan dishes you can
All the seitan you can ever imagine, prepared by world-class chefs, okay? But so one, the desire, Bechira requires a conflict. One, Bechira, your emotions want what? I want to immerse myself in the food pleasure. But I remember that I'm trying to be strong and maintain. And if I eat 1,000 calories standing up in 15 minutes at the Shmorg, I'm basically going to shipwreck my efforts that I tried to accomplish the entire day, if not the last 2 days. Okay? So I recognize that I can't do it. So I have a conflict. Desire to eat, recognition that it's going to, although the first 2 minutes of pleasure will be outstanding, but after those 2 minutes, I'll get this sick feeling because I stuffed myself. Now, so there has to be a careful calculation. Do I give in to the desire, or do I modestly approach it so I don't? So do I give in to the desire and get klala, curse, i.e. now I'm fat or fatter, now I'm off my program, harder to get back on it, okay? Or do I enjoy bracha by maintaining my program? Now, step three is the decision to implement that. Now, since that's a hard decision, when you get confronted with, you know, what is great about a smorgasbord? What is awesome about that? Who can identify why that is a potent food pleasure experience?
There's a large variety to choose from.
And?
The food keeps coming. There's no end.
And?
It's the best part.
It's free. You're not paying for this. Come on. It's like free, endless, delicious food. What about those words does people not like? They like all those words. They like free. They like endless. And they like food, delicious food. So free, endless, delicious food. That is a challenge. I know some people that purposely skip. They will come for the chuppah and the main dish, which will be where they're given a plate of food, not whatever you can pyramid on a plate, okay? Because they know they cannot compete. The desire of the food there is too intense. They're just not going to make it. So they come late to the shmor because they know they're hanging around for an hour. And then you have a l'chaim, so your bechira capacity starts to go, and then you're going to show up into Klala City over there, Curse City. Okay, so that's what you got to do. Oh, but if you pre-plan it, like you have a plan, like as Scott says, okay, I know there's going to be a carving station. I'm going to get 2 pieces of the London broil. I'm going to get a piece of the pastrami, straight from the corned beef. I'll eat nothing. I'll have one drink, and then I'm going to be just have my nab a Coke, Diet Coke, and just talking to people because it's about the people, not the food. And that's that. That's your plan. So if you pre-plan that, and if you end up, you know, you're close to the plan, it's still a win. You still have harvested the bracha. You know what I'm saying? Because a lot of bracha and klala are not extrinsic, but are intrinsic to the phenomena. So if Steve is successful following the Scott Shapiro plan of eating, he's able to overcome his desire to stuff his face with his pre-planning, and then he's going to get the bracha. But if he's going to go into the to his shmor and just go hog wild, you know, just go from chafing dish to chafing dish to chafing dish, laying it on till he can simply not eat anything more, he's going to have a lot of clout. First of all, he actually might get physically sick, A. B, he will basically, it's going to be a very hard, then you're going to have a sense of, I can't do this anymore. You'll get disenchanted. You'll get depressed. I can't, you'll have all the problems. You'll have the weight gain, self-loathing and disappointment, and therefore the inability to overcome that to get back on your plan. So, these are all some of the issues that are, so it's a bechira decision. It can be. Now, many people, there's no bechira. They see the food, they eat the food, there's no conflict, okay? They have regret later. They have regret. Okay, scenario number two, we're going to ratchet it up. Jane Mgier has just met a wonderful guy at work. He is wonderful in every way, and he is really into her, which is nice. The only problem is he is not Jewish. How is this a bechira moment? What will be the bracha and the klala, the blessings and curse that will emerge from this, from her? Sorry about that. From her decision. Okay, what do you guys say? What's the bechira? Let's take it through the 3 steps. What's step one? What's the conflict?
She's not Jewish.
That's not the conflict. That's not, that's a result. What's first start, what's, let's break it, let's make it four steps. What's the desire?
Him, the guy.
Put a little more meat on the bone there, Scott. What's the desire?
She's attracted to him.
Is that it?
He's wonderful in every way and into her.
Right. Because, in other words,
so emotionally and everything else around it.
She wants to have an all-absorbing relationship.
Why can't they ever be Jewish? I'm kidding.
Okay. Okay. She wants to have somebody who loves her and appreciates her and respects her and wants to spend time with her. You know, it's a much more multivaried thing. And of course, she's attracted romantically. Okay. In other words, he's hitting all the boxes. It's not just one desire. It's all the desires. It's a physical desire. It's an emotional desire. It's everything. It's the whole package. That's the package of desires. That's one end. So, all right. So what's the other side? We got desire number one. We got all the physical and emotional romantic desires. If that other side is even present, what's the other side?
Either God punishment or Jewish guilt, mother.
Or
sin.
Where either it's a sense
not having
of
Jewish kids.
Either Jewish grandmother
sense,
guilt.
either it's a sense that her sense of identity as being a Jew means that she marries another Jew. Regardless whether she feels that God's gonna strike her down. Or regardless of the fact that she's going to get, familial rejection or pain, okay? But let's say she intrinsically says, like, I want to have a Jewish home. I can't do this with a non-Jewish partner. Without the additional factors. So she's in conflict. She wants to have a all-consuming.
That's a both worlds. She wants her cake and to eat it too.
Well, now she's struggling here. This is a struggle. Bechira means that Bechira is choosing within two. To put it very simply, I'll make it down to one sentence. On one hand, she realizes that being with him would be the most enjoyable experience she would imagine. And she simultaneously recognized that would destroy her. That's the conflict. Now what? That's the most intense. That's a Bechira moment. Can you feel that? I mean, do you feel the stress? She sees it in her mind. She sees clearly. She can visualize all the enjoyments. The walking in the park together, romantic dinners, all that wonderful, just loving experiences. And then she recognized that her whole life, that she values a Jewish life and the Jewish future, is just going away. And the person that she wants to be will never be. That is that stress, that conflict. And she has to, and then with the power of her mind, either she can make a, what they call a Bechira L'Tov, which is she has to withdraw from the relationship. Or a Bechira L'Ra, go for the relationship. Chaim, life. Maves, death. Bracha, blessings. Klala, cursedness. That's Bechira. That's the Bechira thing. But she has to, now obviously, if Jane was a person who did not value her Jewish thing, obviously she would, then of course she's just going to go for the guy. Because why should she give up that great good? And I would say to her, you're right. It's only an extent that if you value your Judaism and you want to have a Jewish future, would you step away from this outstanding relationship? But you feel the Bechira moment. I want you to sort of feel the intensity. It's like, I'm saying it again. She knows that, Jane knows that she would never be more complete emotionally with him. but she knows that will destroy her on a certain level. That is the Bechira moment. Very difficult. You don't always that's why Bechira is not opening up a menu and am I going to order fish or chicken or meat. Those are just competing emotions. Here is a clash of identities, a clash of values. That's why the Torah makes it like there's two pathways. To quote Led Zeppelin, there are two pathways you can go on, okay? Bracha and Klala. The choice is yours. God does not intervene. You are in the driver's seat.
Rabbi, if I may.
Go ahead. You may, and Chaim, you may.
Thank you. So now let's take this to, I think everybody in this class does not have an issue with somebody not Jewish. I don't even think there is an actual choice, but at least for myself, that's not even a Bechira question. The question becomes somebody on a different religion.
First of all, Chaim, you can never say that.
Okay.
But let me tell you why. Let me just tell you why. Because we are not aware of our vulnerabilities. Two, you can be in a certain circumstance where a person's persona and personality can hit you in a very deep way that it's not so simple. I don't want to minimize this. I'm trying to make it very
I appreciate
dramatic.
That. You're right. I could just speak for myself.
In other words, like this. How many people, in other words, in fact, the terrorists, especially when just to get in the area of sexuality, the Torah assumes that we're not going to do a good job in making these choices. Now you understand why the Torah says you cannot be involved in affectionate touch with the other gender. You cannot be alone in a room with another gender. Well, the Chazal say very nicely, Ein apotropos l'arayos. You cannot be your own guardian when it comes to sexual misconduct. You can't watch yourself. If you were alone if you were Chaim, not just you, if any Jewish guy, I don't care how firm he is, walks into a hotel room with a porn star that he finds appealing and nobody's going to know about it, let's see his Bechira. Okay, right. So I'm pointing out.
We're not talking about that though. We're talking about marriage in a longer term situation, and not.
A relationship has more dimension than just purely sexual attraction. It's not limited to that. It has that and much much more.
Right. Absolutely.
So this can be very true. This is dealt with the situation on many occasions.
I'm not talking for the people that are not at this class. And I'm not even going to talk for the people at this class because I was just giving an extra Dan Lechav schuss here for the people that were here. But I'll talk for myself, for example, just me, to break this down back to where I was going with it before is the idea of the Jewish part is the black and white part that makes it less Bechira. But now if you switch that to somebody who's on a way different path or level of religiosity where religious values would be compromised, but still Jewish, that's where it would hit more home for me. And I guess I was asking if, you know, in that aspect, is it a little different?
It is different. So for example, let's say Jane met a Jewish guy who's a devout atheist. Okay. Still, he's Jewish, and there's more. I want to make the case clear, but you're right. There are many shades of gray here that make, you know, I'm not going through all of Bechira. I want to make a very clear case of Bechira. Your case is a little more complex, and I agree with you. And that's going to be on a case-to-case basis, okay? Let me get to, I got 3 minutes left, and I don't like to go over, keep you guys too late. Case number 3, Joe MGR is working hard in sales. Business has been slow. He meets a client who happens to be an existing client of his colleague. He pitches them a deal and the client agrees to his terms. How is this a Bechira moment? What will be the bracha and the klala, the blessing and the curse that will emerge from his decision? Well, okay, this is a start off. What's the desire? Start off. What's the desire?
To make the sale.
to make the sale and therefore make the commission. Pocket it, put it deep into the pocket, and keep on walking. What's the other side?
He's stealing a client from a colleague, from a coworker.
I don't want to be a thief. I don't want to be a person who betrays trust. I don't want
to
be a person.
It's money that should have gone to him. Yeah.
Yeah. When if there are rules in most sales organizations, there are very clear rules about, you know, different situations. But I'm making a very black and white case where clearly he's hopping in on his other guy. He's basically stealing his client. He's what they call a term poaching the client. Okay, he's taking the other guy's money. It's a type of theft. So on the other hand, he feels I don't want to be a thief. But let's say he does it anyways. He takes the money, he gets the commission. So what has he inherited? He thinks he has the bracha, i.e., more money. But what does he have? But what's the klala that he really has inherited? He's now a thief. His identity is a thief. He's a person who is not trustworthy. He's a wicked person. He's undermining the fabric of the society. He's stuck in an infantile state where he believes everything belongs to him, even his good friend. Nothing is sacred. Everything is mine. So yes, he gets the joy of the money, but he has given it, but he has sold himself down. He sold his soul down. He's given up greatly. Now he's thinking this through. He hasn't made a decision yet. He's thinking about the cash. He can really use the cash. He's got some bills. He needs the money. On the other hand, he's got this thing like, I don't want to be a thief. I don't want to undermine my good buddy Steve. And I don't want to have, you know, I don't want these issues. I don't want to be that guy, as we say. I don't want to be that guy. So you can feel the Bechira challenge. On one hand, I will be feeling great by having the money to pay off bills or take my family on a well-deserved vacation. On the other hand, I want to be a person who has violated the trust of my friend, taken which is not mine, and be a thief. That's a Bechira decision. Now, just to go on, there's a rabbi, Rabbi Dessler. You may have heard of Michtav Eliyahu. He has a nice phrase. He calls it like everybody's Bechira frontier or the Bechira issues, where your Bechira frontier is, you may be a person who will not be involved in theft. You know, as you sort of like got that down. That is not really much of a choice. I just, you know, you're very good about that. But there'll be other areas which you're weak on. You know what I'm saying? Everybody has their different Bechira front line. You know what I'm saying? There's a front line of Bechira. Some battles you've already won. You're just fighting on another front. So the question is, what you want to think about is, where's your Bechira front? Where's the battle? Where's the challenge? And what can you do? And thank God Hashem has given us the blessing of tshuva. If we failed in our Bechira, we got a second chance. And we got a third chance. And if we work at a fourth chance, fifth chance, that's what Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur is all about. So even if we don't make the right Bechira, we have an opportunity to get another attempt. So we want to end the night we started. I think we should celebrate Simone Biles. This is a courageous, she's not a Jewish woman, but she exemplified for the world, if they think about it for more than a moment, what free will is. There was a desire to make everybody happy, to perform, to do what she was expected to do. She had the internal self-recognition that she is going to be involved in self-harm, recognized that mental health is physical health. She thought about that carefully. She made the decision, endured people's comments by the thousands, snarky people on social media, saying that she's a loser. And even if nobody supported her, she did the right thing. She didn't care. When you think about Bechira, just remember that example. She's a good example of Bechira Latov. And what does she get? Brachot, as our Parsha tells us. And what does she avoid? Klalot, curses, because she did the right thing. Okay? Simone Biles. Respect.
Respect.
That's it, baby. That's it. All right, everyone. Any questions? Bechira is a mega topic. I want to at least do some exploration tonight. I think we got the basic sense of it.
Hey, we did it nicely. The Olympics, which I love. I love the Olympics. I always love watching.
Yeah. You summer. And 1 billion other people, if not 2 billion. Absolutely. All right, guys. Have a great night, and I'll see you next week.
Thanks, Rabbi.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.